Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 198. My name is John. Now, it don't make sense why you're just like the rest. This is your only warning. The following podcast will have spoilers about the recently released Supergirl movie and the Woman of Tomorrow miniseries that the movie is based on. This is one of the rare instances where the movie actually makes improvements on the original story. I mentioned last podcast that I hadn't read the Woman of Tomorrow miniseries that the movie is based on. I hadn't intended to read it because I'm not a fan of the writer. But I thought it wouldn't be fair. So for the past couple of weeks, I've read not only The Woman of Tomorrow, but also I've read the first appearance of Supergirl in Action Comics number 252, plus a few of her adventures in subsequent issues. I also read the first six issues, or the first two story arcs, whichever was longer, from every Supergirl ongoing series DC has ever published, with Kara as the cousin of Superman. That's six separate volumes. For those of you unaware, the reason why I specify the series with Kara as Superman's cousin is because the post-crisis Supergirl comic featured a character that was not Kryptonian, rather a synthetic life form created by Lex Luthor, who later merges with a human and gets angel powers and, you know, just don't worry about that. It's not important to this podcast. While I may one day delve into that story, I stuck with the series based on the Kryptonian-born character. Here's a few things about her various iterations. First, the early Supergirl stories are pure Silver Age naivete. Argo City survived the destruction of Krypton thanks to Zor-El's force field. And Kara wasn't born until after the disaster. Supergirl and Superman hit it off and trust each other right away. She speaks English thanks to Kryptonian science. And yes, everyone she knew died, but she was okay because she still had Cousin Cal. It's cute, sweet, and at times really stupid. But that's the chances you take with the Silver Age. Her first two solo series focused on her trying to balance her schooling with her heroic adventures. The low light for me was the third issue of the first solo book that ended with her pouting on the grass outside the school dance because she was the only girl who didn't get a date. The first series was done in the early 70s, the second in the early 80s, so they were a little more mature than her early appearances, but still pretty tame and certainly dated by modern standards. Supergirl would die in 1985, in issue number 7 of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that is still the peak of the character to me. DC then mandated that Superman must be the only Krypton survivor, so Cousin Kara would be shelved for 20 years while that synthetic version took over. In 2005, DC decided to bring Kara Zor-El back in the pages of Batman Superman, because for some stupid reason they chose not to call it World's Finest. This is a modern retelling of her origin, except this time, when she lands on Earth, Kara can only speak Kryptonian, is afraid of everyone, and in a very poor editorial choice for a character that's only supposed to be 15 years old, is naked. This version of the character gets blatantly hypersexualized through the first couple of years of issues I've read. It was more than a little disturbing, and I'm pretty sure if James Gunn had directed the movie, this would have been the version we got. A couple of years later, the Supergirl comic would be restarted due to the Flashpoint series resetting the entire DC universe. This is where we get the Kara who was born on Krypton. She was supposed to follow baby Kal to Earth. However, things go wrong, and she is in suspended animation for decades and finally makes it to Earth long after Kal-El has grown up and become Superman. While a lot of this volume had interesting stories, it also had a very odd change to the mythos. She is supposed to kill Kal. Why? Jor-El created the Phantom Zone, but he unwittingly released a hidden evil on Krypton that eventually caused its destruction. The evil is somehow tethered to Jor-El and then transfers to his only heir, who is, of course, Kal-El. So Kara has to kill Kal so the evil can no longer be connected to our universe and affect Earth the same way it did Krypton. Kara then struggles with her inner demons when she learns of her purpose, so she purposely stays away from Kal for a year because she didn't know if she could or would go through with it. I bring up this specific storyline because that is the only time I ever read a story where Kara pushes Kal away. Keep this in mind because I'm going to talk more about it later. The next two volumes become much more cartoonish visually. The 2016 volume takes more of its theme from the Supergirl TV show that was running at the same time. And I don't know when this happened in continuity, but Supergirl's dad is now Cyborg Superman. And that just didn't feel right to me. But this volume was okay enough to get me through the first two story arcs. The 2025 series goes full into the cartoon style, complete with Kara saving a nerdy Kryptonian girl from Kandor, who then comes to Earth, where the yellow sun not only gives her superpowers, it also gives her bigger breasts and a fat ass. There's also an issue where Supergirl and her friends get dressed up provocatively to go to a goth party. Again, odd choices to allow that kind of sexualization for a book about teenage girls. That last series has all of the Silver Age silliness without any of its charm. And I was very happy to finish that second story arc so I could stop reading it. And then there's the Woman of Tomorrow 8-issue series that the movie is based on. This has to be one of the absolute worst DC miniseries I have ever read. And I've been reading DC Comics for 47 years. The story itself is a slog. There is an entire issue dedicated to the intergalactic bus ride that they take. A full issue. Ruthie, who is recounting the story from the distant future, is loquaciously verbose. And yes, I know those two words mean the same thing. You practically have to go back to the Golden Age to find comic books packed with that many words per page. Tom King either has an expansive vocabulary, or he just got himself a new thesaurus and damn it, he's gonna use it. Supergirl and Ruthie catch up to the guy who killed her father, and he uses magic to teleport them billions of light years away. So now we gotta start all over. They catch up to him again, and we finally get to the end, only to find out that Ruthie has lied about what happened all along. Supergirl didn't kill Krem for her. Ruthie herself didn't kill Krim. So how did Krim die? He didn't. Supergirl sent him to the Phantom Zone, where he's been for 300 years. She says it took him 100 years just to get over his anger. Another 100 years to realize the consequences of his actions and the effects on his victims. And another 100 years trying to make up for what he'd done. So now he's reformed exactly the way Supergirl continually persuaded Ruthie to accept along their journey. They release Krim from the Phantom Zone in a field outside Ruthie's house. He sees Ruthie for the first time in 300 years and drops to his knees, apologizing and begging for her forgiveness. Without a single word from either of them, Ruthie uses a sharpened end of her cane to slash Krim's throat. His body collapses to the ground. Ruthie and Supergirl calmly walk away. It was an atrocious ending to a lousy story, and I regret ever wasting my time on it. And that is what they based the movie on. So I was not optimistic. I mean, if you listen to the last podcast, you know I did not have high hopes for this movie at all. I found the cheapest ticket in the area, about 8 miles away, on Friday morning. I had wasted my money on the horrendous Superman movie last year. I was going to keep my losses to a minimum on this one. And as I just mentioned, if you listen to the last podcast, you'll know I had low expectations for this movie. That being said, in general, the movie was better than I expected, based off the source material and the trailers that I saw. Keeping my expectations low was probably a good thing. I did find some things that I liked about this movie. First off, at least this time, when Superman sat down to have a long, quiet conversation, there was not an immediate danger to the people outside that he was blatantly ignoring. See? It's good to keep the bar low. I'm glad that they kept Kara's original origin. I like that she was born after Krypton exploded. There's something about that whole "I was supposed to be Kal's babysitter on Earth" continuity that just never sat well with me. Kara actually shows some growth and some signs of becoming a decent hero. I don't know where this falls into the DCU timeline, but I certainly hope it's set after the events of last year's Subpar Man. That cameo last year was one of the many low points of the movie, and I hope that we never see that side of Supergirl in this universe again. Jason Momoa is visually the perfect person to play Lobo. I mean, you put him in the makeup and it's like the character has come to life right off the page. And more on that later, but for a PG-13 movie, I think they did just about everything that they could with this character. The transportation fight a la Nightcrawler with the aliens trying to rob the space bus is probably my favorite part of the movie, because it doesn't get too chaotic or difficult to follow along, and it was somewhat intelligent and clean visually, as opposed to the melees against the brigands. In general, again, the movie was not as bad as I thought it would be. That's not to say, though, that it isn't free of problems. There were some things that I didn't like. Let's just get this one out of the way right up front. I don't know what that creature was supposed to be or what was coming out of it. But they ate it. Maybe it was excrement. Maybe it was eggs or larvae. Regardless, it was gross, it was stupid, and it was totally unnecessary. So, Kara, you have super senses, but you don't think to use them to eavesdrop on the two people who are acting suspicious? And you make noise walking down the stairs, risking that they will hear you rather than slowly floating down since, you know, you can fly. I had the same problem with Superman last year, not using his powers to track the hammer as he flies away from Metropolis. Dumb writing makes for dumb characters. Similarly, in the comic book that this movie is based on, Krim traps Kara on a planet with a green sun, which slowly and painfully kills Kryptonians. But all she has to do is stay in the shade and endure the pain long enough for the green sun to set, and then she's able to regain her strength and get away. Well, that's stupid enough. But in the movie, she's on a planet with two suns, one green and one yellow. So all she has to do, once again, is wait in the shade and endure the pain until the green sun sets and the yellow sun rises for her to get back to full power. It's just stupid, stupid writing. Now, talking about comic book accuracy. Superman knows how to speak Kryptonian in every iteration of the character. In the modern continuities, where Kara comes to Earth, he talks to her in their native language as soon as he meets her. For Kal-El to have his Fortress of Solitude and all the Kryptonian technology that goes with it in this continuity, he damn well should have greeted Kara in their home language. There is absolutely no reason for that stupid scene where she lands on Earth and he can't understand what she's saying. And making fun of the underwear on the outside of the costume only drives home the point that it is an outdated and unnecessary feature. Also, Superman is not supposed to be clueless or emotionally illiterate. If somebody needs space and time alone, he gives it to them. He did that when Kara was avoiding him for a year in the series that I mentioned earlier. He doesn't try to force the issue, even when he's eager to help, and even if it's his only surviving family member. Constantly reaching out to the point of harassment is not his way. But just like in last year's movie, this is a very emotionally immature character. And it's really frustrating to watch Superman be so freaking oblivious. Conversely, it makes absolutely no sense for Kara to avoid Kal. With the exception of that odd storyline I mentioned earlier, Kara always keeps Kal close. I mean, they are the only surviving Kryptonians that we know of in this continuity. And they're also related. So no matter the trauma she has experienced, her avoidance of Kal is really strange for the character. I mentioned Lobo earlier. Lobo was pretty much just Jason Momoa being Jason Momoa. I know he loves the character, but he really didn't add very much. Lobo is a pretty vicious alien, and they let him cut loose a tiny bit, but nowhere near as violent as he is in the comics. I figured since it is a PG-13 movie, they would probably neuter the character. And to be perfectly honest, an R-rated slaughterfest Lobo movie directed by James Gunn is one of the few DC comic book movies I think he would actually be suited for. Okay, and of course, I have to mention it. I really, really hate this version of Crypto. Thankfully, he spent most of his time in doggy intensive care and had little opportunity to be annoying, although he managed to be quite annoying in the little time he was around. I feel like I've ranted enough about Super Mutt, so let me just say that the best thing about him in this movie is that he isn't in it very much. This could have been a genuinely poignant movie about enduring and healing from trauma. Unfortunately, every time they had a chance to really deal with the subject, we had to get upended by a snarky comment or a chaotic fight scene with so much camera movement you'd think that we were watching it from a roller coaster. And annoying CGI dogs aside, there's only so many cliche, juvenile jokes and sight gags that I can take from comic book movies anymore. I mean, Kara finally faces the loss of her people. She helps Ruthie get revenge. They've endured pain. They've faced impossible odds. And then it's all, hey, let's go out and get drunk. Even Keith Giffen knew when to keep his Justice League serious and hold off on the foolishness. For the second DC movie in a row, the title character cannot overcome the threat on his or her own, and another hero, or in this case an anti-hero, needs to save them. Lobo saves her, and she would have been dead without him showing up just in time to claim his bounty, which is conveniently the guy who's about to execute Supergirl. I mean, can you really call it a solo movie if the other heroes are the ones doing all the heavy lifting? Also, for the second DC movie in a row, in a new cinematic universe that is supposed to be morally superior to the previous universe, the title character kills a villain without a hint of remorse. This time, it isn't just allowing a clone to get knocked into a black hole and die. It's an outright execution of a defeated and defenseless villain. Now that I've gotten your attention, listen with both ears to what I'm about to say. There are only two logical ways for this story to end, the way it's played out. Number one, Krim is imprisoned. Or, number two, Kara kills Krim. Either is absolutely a better resolution than how the comic book ended. That's why I said earlier that the movie actually improved on the book. Should Kara have killed? Generally, no. But it is perfectly understandable within this specific story. And as I was watching the story unfold, I expected that Kara would kill him in the end. The only reason that I am being critical of the execution is because of the abject hatred thrown at Henry Cavill's Man of Steel movie because Cal killed Zod to prevent the death of innocent victims. If you're going to be critical of that death under desperate circumstances with immediate remorse from Superman, then you should be critical of Kara killing Krim and Cal killing the clone in the DCU and not feeling the least bit bad about it. But the biggest problem with this movie is it's all been done before. John Wick already did the dog revenge thing. Mad Max Fury Road already did the enslaved women getting saved. Men in Black already did the oddball quippy aliens. The Hangover already did the drunk people getting pulled into a wild and dangerous situation, complete with the stupid jokes. True Grit already did the child seeking revenge and the hero trying to get rid of her. And all these other movies did it so much better. And that's not even mentioning the dozens of superhero movies that better balance their somewhat shallow plot with heavy doses of pedestrian comedy. If you like your superhero movies to be equal parts action and stupidity, you'll probably like Supergirl. If you're okay with your movies just using the same templates over and over, you'll probably like Supergirl. But unless you really, really love the Supergirl character, there's no reason to spend money on a ticket. It'll be out in a couple months on streaming. Check it out then. You're not missing anything that can't wait. In fact, you could even wait for it to come out on a free platform like Tubi or Pluto, and you'll be fine. It is absolutely an okay movie. In Will Sterling parlance, it's fine. It's certainly better than the last DC movie, but there's nothing truly special or memorable about it to separate it from anything else over the past 20 years. It's just another superhero movie made up of bits and pieces of things you've seen many times before. So don't waste your hard-earned money on an overpriced movie ticket. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.